I quite important to them when they're research that they're representing samples of consultants. And the task you may very well have consultant a representative sample or representative grouping of those transactions, but the report doesn't indicate that. So that would be a quite important to kind of take into account. Then of course there's baseline data. Index of belief that there is quite solid baseline data that exists, but this is, you know, how many military veterans are out there? What is, you know, the age distribution, what is the gender distribution?
And I keep treat, you know, in the whole thing. For instance, if you take honorable Langin, who is a veteran, and at the same time be victim of human rights abuse because of the island. So how do we navigate through this thing? Because surely one can have a dual identity. If you can be a victim of human rights abuse and imagine a veteran, and you get double pay in that case. And lastly, in a conflict situation, who do we regard as victims of human rights abuse? Those who are on the receiving end of the government, or both sides, for instance, there are people who feel outlaws abuse their rights because they were killed, you know, in the country, but in Kiev, but outlaws. Do we rope them in as victims of human rights abuse and therefore is the room of compensation? Thank you.
Isolation of apartheid, and the need for they are affecting association of omission, with the hope that they would benefit in the downstream. Thanks.
And how can that be coined into the military?
policies, you can stand and stand and stop. Of course, the owner will remember that you already are good. So you can't take that in from any level. Of like us doing this kind of when age is concerned, because you know for a fact that in Africa, they've been trying to change. But also, add on the question of verifying, but not only verifying, but we know for a fact that children are involved really in education. How do we deal with this issue? Because we know that it has been said, when we have learned how to write it like that, we never learned how to write it. Let's not only focus on the standard, but how to deal with it. That they also take cognition of the fact that the reality at hand in all the ground, such as children part of the war. More particularly, I would like to know how that student deals with it, how it helps in everything that is done to place for the
government
station.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members, for your comments and questions. Can you respond to them? In terms of categories of questions, and there were a number of questions and comments about does other groups of more examples of failure than success. It certainly hasn't been success, but it's where individuals haven't been vetted or haven't been provided effective support from the people in the past. The seed capital has been given, but then there's no support mechanism to help those individuals get a profitable business going. And certainly, if this was a consideration of a benefit for South African investors, that there would need to be quite significant support in providing mentorship, providing business training and business support. On the issue of tenders, was the question about tenders. Was that from the research, the point I made in the presentation is it's not quite. In fact, I couldn't find evidence to suggest that it is, you know, the exception. But I think where it does happen in the case of the US developed economy, it has a substantial kind of Department of Defense, which has a lot of contracts and work to be done. And it's a big part of their compensation for those veterans who were injured in the line of duty, not just Iraq and Afghanistan, who have going concerns and hopes that they will possibly get preferential treatment. But it's not widely practiced. But it all depends on a case-by-case basis. Generally, it's not practiced, but that's just because maybe it's a circumstance of government that makes it happen. But yeah, the point is not quite correct. Then there was the issue of the report and whether it's a credible report or requires additional information. The problem is the report that I have members of the public get access to is very difficult to judge whether it's a credible report or not because it's fairly key information. The third one was to get a report with dependencies around research design, research method, how the information is collected, how the data and evidence was verified, and so it's an aesthetic judgment can be made there that I'm available with the report that I have in front of me. Had to ask Pinchy, I'm asking questions. And I think that these are important, these questions are answered because they may very well be concepts in the mind, and protests and complaints from military veterans is the kind of the data is not seen as reliable and as representative. I think that's the kind of thing that they should, where there is violence needs to be resolved. So it's a question of adding the dependency to providing that data to the bureau. But on the issue of data, I mean, I'm aware that the department has some data on it, and it's important that the data is getting put in the public domain. And there also has been a number of research projects that were done on the state of military veterans. You know, are they employed, are they unemployed? That can be done in the context of research reports that need help. For example, there was one that I was responsible for doing with another colleague in 2003 who released it. But essentially it was what's called a military defense net indicator that the more vulnerable group, particularly those members formerly from the non-statutory force, had very high were, you know, largely unemployed, 2/3 were unemployed in 2003. So 7 or 8 years later, I'm not sure the circumstances are like. So that's the information available, and there's a number of other reports that we've kind of taken as well. I think that addresses all the questions and comments.
Thank you very much. I think we should take another presentation now. Contact with them, and if we can do so, perhaps the reader could
additional competence over the labour folks who have made sacrifice in the struggle. And several points, just as by way of introduction. In particular, the nature of the struggle in South Africa was one that was based on deliberately excluding particular people based on race and dispossessing them over decades. And so the consequences of this extreme socioeconomic disadvantage are very, very difficult to overcome. And so when the presentation speaks to the fact of massive unemployment, those figures apply to all people who have made sacrifices in the struggle. Kulumani maintains an extensive database of 65,000 documents related to all people who sacrificed in the struggle. We don't distinguish whether they were military veterans or whether they contributed in other ways. And our analysis shows that 78% of people are unemployed. So what we endeavour to do is again to argue that the present moment provides particular ways of doing this in an inclusive and integrated approach, particularly because up to now our engagements have all been with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development on the grounds that post-TRC resolution of the unfinished matters related to the TRC have been designated to them. But we have recently been in the process of a number of consultations with the Department of Justice. The head of the TRC unit, Ambassador Motshabela Tsetu, has been asking that we actually, from his perspective, we look at how do we construct people as veterans, no matter how they contributed to the struggle. And there are particular sources of funding that could do this in a very inclusive way. So just a little bit of background on Kulumani. Our mission is to build a just and inclusive society in which we restore the dignity of all those harmed by apartheid through facilitating their transformation from victims into survivors and active citizens. So I think I've spoken about the membership and large number of Western Cape members are here today. And everybody, we embrace everybody irrespective of their age, political affiliation, gender, or any other criteria. And over the past 2 years, the work related to this agenda for trying to assist with the socioeconomic transformation of the people most harmed from the past has fallen under a consortium that has progressively engaged these issues and has a lot of experience going back to 1995. And I think we are, the members of that coalition have a range of experiences to address these very practical challenges that face us in helping people to overcome the harm and the economic consequences that they continue to face. Just to mention the organization, ourselves, the Institute for Justice and Reconciliation, the International Center for Transitional Justice that will present data, the Center for the Study of Violence and Reconciliation, the South African History Archive, Human Rights Media Center, Freedom of Expression Institute, and the Legal Resources Center. And this coalition is functioning extremely well and very collaboratively, and we look forward to actually assisting in the intervention. So we want to concur with the speaker from IASB that this was a mass movement of individuals against political oppression, and we I think we have looked already at the range of ways in which people took up arms or were involved in a mass struggle or gave shelter, and one of the recent advances has been the approach of the Freedom Park Legacy Trust, on which we sit on the Verification Committee. And initially, Freedom Park Legacy Trust was considering only to honour the names of military combatants in the struggle. And years and the discussions amongst the verification committee members, up to this point, 417 people who would be considered to have been non-violent struggles for social change have had their names inscribed on the Sikong Buso. So there is a precedent there for a way to take this forward. Many times to sketch out and this draft bill very accurately names the challenges that people face, but it doesn't speak to the impact of prolonged detention, of torture, the loss of breadwinners, the extrajudicial killing, the huge loss of education opportunities and consequently of formal jobs, and the great loss of property and land. So, I think you can go to the next one. So we want to ask that we adjust our approach and maybe collaborating with the Department of Justice as well in including people through provisions that are open and transparent and based only on urgent needs and sacrifices having been made by individuals. And we say that this distinction, particularly from Kulumani, because we've been able to do many kinds of sacrificial social interventions. We've offered internships to former military combatants. We are launching another beautiful commemorative project in Kakiso on the 15th of April. We find incredible benefits in building the relationship between what would be called human rights victims and military veterans. And in particular, our understanding of apartheid was that it was targeted on destroying social ties amongst communities. And our very deep concern is that this model that is being presented will once again create a kind of division around preferencing certain individuals over others. Maybe just to mention, over the past 2 years, we've had quite a lot of very rewarding experience with what we call a victim re-empowerment program. We've had the privilege of presenting the outcomes to the Department of Social Development International Conference on Victim Empowerment. And the number of the presentations were driven by military combatants. We have made interventions around dealing with xenophobia because many combatants have other experiences of African countries. And just to give you an example of some of the roles that are currently being played by veterans, veterans are being very involved in community safety officers. The past 3 days we've been in Beko and Mpumalanga, and people from the struggle have managed to get more mobile police stations and very organized community police forum activities going. Through a grant that we discussed back in the from Atlantic Philanthropy, all these combatants who did internships with Kulumani published social histories of the areas they came from, and some of the military veterans' histories have not yet been honored. We've also developed people as community youth educators, and in particular, the last one on human rights researchers at community level. Former combatants have been trained by us on our business and human rights program to conduct surveys of companies. Particularly in the retail industry, of their compliance with international human rights norms and standards. So we're saying our particular concerns with this bill are that the adjudication of sacrifice should not be restricted to the membership of any particular political organization, but should focus rather on the facts and evidence of real suffering of victims as a result of being involved in the struggle. you're concerned that omissions and inconsistency in the provision of remedies and benefits for veterans of the struggle should be avoided, and particularly now that the South African government has ratified the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. We're very pleased that this bill speaks particularly to the issues of military veterans who live with disabilities, whether they are psychological or physical. An earlier presentation, committee members mentioned that there is a need that people receive benefits through the TRC. And I think this needs to be corrected, because up to this point in time, only 17,000 individual South Africans receive the once-off payment of 30,000 rand. And the numbers of people who have not yet been documented is something that the Department of Justice is presently confronting. We were asked by the Department of Justice what it would take to go out and do this process from scratch, where we actually found people who had been harmed in this struggle against political repression. And there are figures available, and I think it could be a process that we could probably do together with the Department of Defense. Registration and recognition must be simple and transparent. Independent criteria should be used to validate applications of veterans and victims for benefits to avoid any corruption or political manipulation. And any semblance of arbitrariness in decision making should be avoided through creating a system that distributes the same benefits to all using objective criteria. Just to pick up on the issue of specialization, we have actually assisted thousands of former combatants to submit applications for special pensions, and many of them have secured their special pensions. We managed to get the date expanded by another 5 years to include more people who joined up when they were young, and we managed to get the date for application extended to the 31st of December last year. But at this stage, Black Sash in Grahamstown is preparing a high court challenge, because there are so many unanswerables about the people who are having their special pension applications rejected. It's very hard to see that there's any kind of standardization. People who spend the same number of years in St. Albans prison together, some of them are getting special pensions and others are not. And so it's become a very, very contested issue. Just some of the consultation we had with people who've worked in other regions of the world. This is evidence from the ICTJ in Latin America, who advocate that there should be equivalence created between victims and veterans, rather than between veterans of the struggle of the past and those in the military. The provisions that are on the table try to provide the benefits constructed for the post-apartheid military to veterans of the military struggle of the past, and we think there are problems with that. Veterans of political struggles have more in common with victims and survivors than with the military. And across the world, the institutions that provide benefits or interventions for veterans of struggle are much more empathetic to whether they're military veterans or human rights struggle victims. So better and more appropriate services basically have been found to be provided by organizations tailored for veterans, survivors, and veterans of the struggle, because they do share more in common. Issues around creating these systems of discriminatory benefits for us are the fact that criminal members have for many, many years had to bear insults and denigration from people in official positions. Statements like "you didn't participate in the struggle for monetary reward" is a very classic one. And we see that the same kinds of insults and denigration could become attributable to military veterans. And because of the nature of the post-apartheid society, there's a disconnect. the memory of the reasons that people went into military formations to take part in the struggle. So we are asking for equal acknowledgement and appreciation and equal benefits and services without distinction. And this day is becoming strongly visible before you that the policies need to serve veterans and the added and victims in life and to remember them in death, provide adequate compensation for disablement as a right, not a welfare benefit, provide access to quality healthcare for physical and mental needs and for rehabilitation, and probably the most important thing is this access to healthcare, according to the international literature. And all the barriers of inequality should be avoided. So we had the opportunity on the 13th of December to present the financial model to the Department of Justice. And in that model, we suggested that all people who have these urgent needs resulting from whatever role they take should receive a basic grant package of $2,000 a month for 5 years, which is based on the TRC research on what it would take to assist people to recover from the socioeconomic harm they suffered. And the costing of that, if we were to include veterans and victims based on existing figures, would be an amount of R2 billion per year for 5 years. And beyond that, people may know that the President's Fund now contains 973 million rand, and nothing has been disbursed for the past 5 years. And we have submitted proposals on how that fund could provide for all of these people, if part of it was ring fenced for the kind of access to capital that we know Kulumani members have been fighting to get, because once they have a basic level of subsistence to a small security net, they then are trapped because they cannot start the businesses. So what the previous speaker called seed capital, we've asked for certain amounts of the President's Fund to be protected for that seed capital and for the other parts of the President's Fund to provide the very tailored healthcare services, educational benefits, and memorialization activities that would benefit both veterans and victims. So basically, I think because our struggle is for one of human dignity, for us, human dignity is about participation and active involvement in determining one's own destiny. That is a practice for everyone. People are proving their competence when they have access to a little bit of seed capital and to support. They can do extraordinary things. Develop and adopt policies and regulations that recognize all of these contributions by people to the historic struggle for freedom and justice. The second conclusion is that there are individuals who fall into both categories, and so we would recommend that these measures are worked out to assist people to transform their lives. People need to be able to feed their families. All the combatants we work with said, all I want is to be able to look after my children, the basic human desire and need, and we'd like to be able to do that together. This was a united struggle. Let's not recover parts of our history and forget others. Let's create a united approach. Equal recognition for service and sacrifice. Thank you.
after the Imam, but after saying, after you get all, I would say that the presentation should have been not directly addressing itself to the deed. And I would say, since there was a presentation, that the advisory council must have gender students, that address something that they can put into the deed itself. So, but it's a good presentation. And I agree with most of the things that they make me happy. Now, just like that, no,
Those extremities and
Justin Fick, who in the meeting in November last year when guys to the big workshop, said that he is advocating as the head of the TRC unit for victims of human rights to be included as veterans of the struggle. I'm worried that maybe there's not any cooperation or discussion across those government ministries. Thank you very much. I think I've covered it.
Thank you very much, ma'am. In the last 2 days, the members felt that the presentation does not speak sufficiently to the people. And also the presenter feels that you give them an opportunity to go and upgrade the presentation and submit it to the sector. If you can do that, thank you. Before the telephone.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We will now call on the presentation by Under Pressure.
Having experience to work with the relocation of
roles and the contributions to socioeconomic diversity and our participation in the heritage sector, we have a lot of experience in terms of what is going wrong, and that is why we are here. The literal framework of the bill to us makes some sense. What does not make sense, what concerns us, is how this bill is going to be interpreted and implemented for the ratification. And we draw on our particular experience with another bill in which your, another act, sorry, in which your bill speaks, and that is Act 25 of 1999, the National Heritage and Resources Act. This act is a very good act. It is of national state. However, it has not worked and has resulted in us being in a situation where what you are going to be doing is going to feel the pinch of what we are going to do. Therefore, this is our opportunity to actually bring you in line with what we are experiencing. Our presentation is therefore focused on two issues, heritage and issues of education, skills and training. In terms of heritage and mental health services in South Africa, mostly because it is so conflated with the issues of art and culture. Heritage is not just art and culture. Heritage is a philosophical mandate. It is how we interpret and view things. There are a whole range of industries that fall under heritage. And fortunately, we are still sitting in the understanding of South Africa that heritage is only art and culture. That is not true. We have a problem in terms of heritage as to who is managing heritage. Currently, we have about 5 to 6 government departments, each managing an aspect of heritage, which is not working. When we have this, we have problems in terms of how we work through legislation to make heritage work. Internationally, heritage is a key driver of the green economy, something which we are all focusing on at the moment. It is also a key driver of issues such as the liberation struggle. What is the actual conceptualization? What is the ideology? How do we place the narrative? How do we look at the product, etc.? If we don't know who does what within it, we should have problems. In terms of education, skills, and training, what is really going on? This is one of your mandates under Schedule 5 of the bill. However, the reality out there in terms of what is going to happen, our concern therefore is, once ratified, how are you going to manage the challenges? The 1999 Act 25 was ratified. That never worked. We still sit with the same problem. We have institutions who cannot do their work. We cannot grow the sector. How are you going to be impacted by that? What do we need to look at now in terms of going forward? These are our areas of concern, in particular reference to heritage and to education, skills, and training. Schedule 3 makes a statement that state organs will cooperate with the Department of Military Veterans. The same assumption is made at 25, it is not good. Schedule 5.2a, the minister can implement subject to the availability of resources. Again, the same was made in Act 25, it has not worked. 5.2b2, issues of appropriation, very important. You will be relying on other organs of state and departments being able to appropriate the correct budget. Again, it has not happened within our sector because of the capacity to actually appropriate has not come forward. 5.2b3, the signing of HRAs, another key factor within our sector, has not come forward. You will also be sitting with that problem, especially when it comes to the issue of heritage. Schedule 7b1-7, the strategies and the programming. We have a very serious problem in South Africa at the moment because of Act 25 not having been correctly interpreted, nor managed, nor implemented. We have a range of government departments all implementing what they think is their mandate, and yet there is no coordination between the aspects of it. And this you will see coming out. Now, the basis of this is actually from the 1990s, and it has to do with how we interpret legislation. In 1994, we had the first white paper on arts, culture, and heritage. Heritage was not understood. Heritage Council Act. The reason why I brought all of these acts up is because they are the basis of the confusion into which you will be walking unless a few steps are not already taken. The result of all of this legislation, there is a major confusion with regard to the program of the National Liberation Group. Who actually is in charge of it? How is it meant to work? The NHC has been spearheading it. We know that it is on the route, or on the path towards recognition as a World Heritage resource, which is a very important resource, and a new type of resource, involves various sites, etc. But the actual implementation of it is skewed. The capacity, once again, is an issue that needs to be looked at. Who funds it? What are the implications of the funding? The majority of the funding is coming from the locker. That and the provincial government will fund what they are doing at the moment in terms of summits, where veterans, for example, are called to summits and are asked to give important sites. The majority of veterans who are called to these summits are not willing to give information anymore because we don't see purpose from it. DAC, what are they commemorating? What is DAC mandate? In February, the Matola Ray project and the commemoration was launched. Is that liberation? Is that art and culture? Who should actually be born under? The Freedom Park, in terms of honouring, they are doing the Wall of Names, etc. Who else is doing Wall of Names? Who else is doing collection of data? We have a various assortment of organisations, institutions, organs, etc., all doing collection of data, and we have one huge mess going on. The Department of Tourism is looking at the issues of tour guiding with regard to military veterans. Again, this is a major source of conflict amongst military veterans. Why should there only be tour guides? Why have we still not dealt with what it is that military veterans have come back with? What is it they have done already? When we talk about ACMEs, militants amongst military veterans, why can't there be tour guides? This is the level of imagination that we are dealing with. We have another source of conflict that results from the legislation being misinterpreted from the 1990s. We have the CARs. These are the Provincial Heritage Resource Authorities. Through Act 25 of 1999, it clearly stated that the NHC may institute. If the province was not going to institute, another body could. The purpose is, heritage is governed according to three levels. At a national level, we have the Forestry Heritage Resources Authority. At a provincial level, we have the Provincial Heritage Resources. And at the local level, it is local government. Each has a specific role to play, and your role is meant to come into conflict with this as well. At the local government level, the local government are meant to be collecting the narratives and sites, the places of commemoration that are related to military veterans. Under the definitions of Act 25, it says very clearly that this act may be interpreted according to those in the liberation struggle. The CARs are basically studying, they're almost non-existent. Where they work, they are Schedule 3Cs, which is what actually finds the utility. The majority, however, were constituted as departments within departments. Act 35 makes it very clear that heritage is non-sectarian. We also have a problem with regard to the skills sector. In order to access skills from teachers, you need to pay levies. How many military veterans are able to contribute skills development levy? We know, because the majority are employed. I think from what we've heard already, that the data statistics are showing us that. Therefore, how is the teacher who's meant to serve as a particular constituency able to do it? They cannot. There are further issues with regard to the skills and how we actually address issues with military veterans that we don't later. The impact of all of this, the legislation and the various programs that are running, is that number one, we have an incredible lack of coordination going on amongst military veterans, programs, developments in South Africa. Incredible lack of coordination. Number two, because the issue of understanding the need of heritage, of liberation struggle, so far going to indigenous knowledge systems, it's not understood. You rarely find a government department knowing what the budgetary concerns are. And I refer back to Schedule 3, Schedule 5, Schedule 7. This bill, more reliance liberation group. It has been evaluated really as a time in the first. Where's the demand? We need to start looking at this. The issues of RPO, as I mentioned earlier, are still not dealt with. We don't know how to integrate military veterans effectively into our economic mainstream. The processes that took place in the 1990s, processes that took place in 2000, what have we done with the qualifications that people came back with? Into which economic mainstream will it fit people themselves? The research and data bases that have already indicated a lot of them are fragmented, there's a lot of duplication going on. That often seems to be the case why special pensions, for example, won't stay related. There is too much going on at the same time. What the situation has resulted in as well is we've got to cover more. In terms of commemoration, liberation, heritage, military veterans, the Department of Arts and Culture is definitely going to be in conflict with the Department of Military Veterans. Whose mandate is it to commemorate their military veterans? The National Heritage Council is going to be reversing the Department of Arts and Culture in terms of policy and funding. Is DMV going to take this over? CRAFT, our Provincial Heritage and War Society, is also in tug of war with the NHC in terms of process. It all comes down to an understanding of what Act 25 is to. SARA, the same thing, you're going to be in conflict with DMV in terms of database, in terms of repatriation, commemoration, etc. And then we have the issue of local government versus FAMDA. Today there is one local government that is actually putting in place the policy in terms of skills and development for military veterans at the University of Dover. Now what happens when FAMDA becomes fully operational and this unit now falls out? What happens to that institutional memory? What happens to the processes and programs that they have put in place? Are we once again in 22 military veterans? The question then is how will Bill B1 of 2011 be implemented, managed, and how are you going to ensure that the objectives of the DMV are met within the context that we're sitting in within our sector? It's a confusing context. Okay, the National Heritage Rules Act 25 of 1999 has never been properly interpreted or implemented. Military Veterans Forces in this Act defines under the definition. The Act further goes on to say, according to the definitions of whoever falls into this Act, there are various principles that we look at in terms of heritage development. The most important being issues such as conservation, socio-economic development, etc. The problem has been that the trials have not been properly constituted. They have not been able to get their reproduction rights, for example, on treaty rights. In fact, the law that governs that our heritage is also the reproduction rights. The amount that should be paid to the cause in order to for them to facilitate development better. You are going to rely on the cause, you're not going to get anything from that. Another critical issue has been that of heritage. As I mentioned right at the beginning, heritage is basically a totally misunderstood concept in South Africa. It is not art and culture. It is conceptual. It's not coming through. Because of this, we really don't know who does what and how it is done. We see, for example, the Department of Communications has now set up an archival repository in terms of military veterans. They put in a program 2 years ago in which they were going to document military veterans, but the veterans were going to benefit, but you were going to do it. The understanding of who does what still doesn't happen very well. As I mentioned much earlier, the issue of Act 25 was its power was taken away, heritage's power got taken away through a misunderstanding of legislation. That really is a concern for ourselves with regards to solving. The impact right now in terms of honoring commemoration and how we can include programs such as names collections, the water names, etc. At the moment, these are the people or the organizations that are doing it, FARA's done it, marketing, various science organizations are doing it, veteran organizations are doing it, the Department of Communications is doing it, and there are issues around are not going to just let it be for long. Education and training, as I mentioned much earlier, get the opportunity served by the teacher system according to policy they call us a set teacher. But again, when it comes to the conflict of issue, they simply do not pay skills and work and living. Therefore, how is the teacher going to serve the constituency who cannot pay interest for services? So we have a major problem. How skilled workers have worked in South Africa with regard to these conditions? In one special project, which was initiated in 2005, the value of 52 million, following the set teacher, which focused on the issues of SME development. So the total and utter failure, it collapsed. Why? How do we expect to throw investment into SME ventures when the issue of business is something that has not been dealt with properly either? You need a context to do business. Patrons are allowed to take on courses such as jewelry making, furniture making, etc., etc., etc. What does this have to do with I need healing? I need to be able to talk about something first. Where other teachers have come in to assist military victims, it's usually done in a smaller one-off ad hoc project where budgets have been allowed. The sustainability of this idea is very limited. How do we actually go forward on that? Veterans are essentially what we call in this area a vulnerable group. We have to look at them within that aspect. If you're talking with Schedule 5 of education, skills, training, etc., you have to start understanding what aspects of this is. On how things can be done and where you need to be actually trained on that. Where you have seen other types of training, it's usually close. 20,000 rand for 10 veterans to learn a skill in brickmaking. 50,000 rand for paving. 100,000 rand for SME. For what? For who? How? It's not necessarily only an issue of that they need support afterwards. We need to understand the economic framework that they actually fit into. That is the most important thing. The research that we have conducted with military veterans in counseling college, looking at the issues of skills, looked at the qualifications that they came in, and looked at what they have been offered since 1994. The majority of the programs that they have been offered have come through the Department of Labor. That's not good enough. If we want veterans to be able to go past, we have to be really an understanding of what they actually need. We have a big problem with regard to qualifications as well. Our qualifications are quite relevant when it comes to the interpretation of where we want to go and to go past of the revenue. I'll take one qualification, new venture creation. When you read a qualification, it is very colonial. It assumes that somebody already has a family history in business. Therefore, they would be able to do business themselves. We need to revisit these qualifications. But to do that, we have to consolidate what we are doing with engineering. We cannot keep fitting them across various sectors. And this is what the bill actually needs to take very seriously. Which part, which organization is it going to work with and how? How do we position engineering as a vulnerable group in our skills education and training environment? The vision. We definitely agree that the bill has vision, and I think we can see it. As I mentioned last week, the process of interpretation that is going to be very important. And these are the other issues that are also going to fit into it. Number one, DMV is going to have to take ownership of the heritage of administration. We have to coordinate. We cannot be scattered across various departments anymore. Yes, the bill does make allowance for various forms of state working together, but what has happened today is that when you use this meta approach, in other words, while you're shifts across government, agriculture, environment, sort of politics, etc., etc., we don't get anything going. One department needs to drive the issue of heritage negotiation. Number two, we really do need an audit, a clear audit of who is doing what and how in terms of military veterans at the moment. Number three, you'll find it in our sector, and I'm sure this would have come up in the various international lists that you would have done as well when you compare. We don't have good policy and procedure. How are you actually going to put this bill into this mess? You need to come up with a policy and procedure on what we're going to do. Number four,
from the nation, how do we get there?
Thank you. Thank you.
the very important point that was made in terms of RPL, etc., what is the solution? There is a solution. The lobbying needs to be done in terms of the new sector. When we think of heritage, we are not a byproduct of something else. We are a key technology driver. We are conceptual. The design falls under us. IKEA falls under us. There is cultural issues falls under us. Craft, visual art, performing art, music, theatre, etc., etc., fall under us. But it goes further. And we're talking about biomimicry that also falls into an aspect of heritage. The problem that we have had in terms of our sector is that heritage was considered a meta sector. It fitted into everything. Therefore, we were split across sectors and we lost the ability to bring out our value and our potential. What we do have at the current stage is the ability to lobby, and I think this is where this bill is very important, the ability to lobby this new speaker to look at a chamber in terms of addressing the skills needs of military veterans. We need to look at it in two ways. SAC-CISA does need to look at it, but at the same time, CAS-CISA needs to look at it as well. We need a chamber which will deal with the issues of heritage and knowledge. RTLE is very difficult because it is the understanding of military veterans is such a critical sector. If we consolidate into these two pieces, we will be able to, number one, review the qualifications that can be used for RPL military veterans. At the moment, people don't know. It's pretty much a guessing factor that goes on. But if you have a chamber that can drive what are the qualifications, that can review the qualifications that are currently in place, are they appropriate for RPL? Then we start to talk about how do you really address issues of skills within military veterans. The question was about company. Yes, the company is a TC. The reason being, we are based on the issue of business. Because heritage is basically an economic system. When you have heritage under an NPO or an NGO, it results in such a limited kind of growth. And we are talking about how do we get economic growth to really move within the sector. That is why the decision was taken to actually forward at this stage. And it has worked today. It's about real business opportunities for heritage.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Honourable members, maybe we should take the advice that you and in your house to get there to the patient. I don't think there is anything that is lost. But that can be contaminated with the business in that time. There are delegations from the department here who should have some of the things we need to maintain. If we don't have the act, now, what you should do is that you should go and upgrade your submission and concentrate on those issues that can get into the deal. And if you can, then submit them to the secretary for the time of attorney. Then this will be comfortable with that.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we have another question? Have the another international center of traditional justice. Can you
answer? Thank you.
program that has been continued over the last decade, which I think would be quite instructive for the committee to consider. Turning now to a few other matters raised in the bill, firstly, the question of the independence of decision-making bodies. We suggest that the advisory council ought to have a definitive number of members. The majority of those members should be independent of government. Section 13 ought to set the numbers of members, not just mention that they cannot be less than 10. We suggest that there is a risk of having an unlimited number of members that could be abused. We suggest that a rotation system could be used. This would mean that roughly half the members are changed every 3 years, and we also suggest that term limits should be imposed. Turning to the appeal board, since the appeal board has to consider questions of law, we think it's problematic that only one member needs to have legal training. There is a risk that the legal opinion of one person may end up dominating those proceedings. A few comments on the requirement of the needs hierarchy. We note that the needs of our veterans and victims are context specific. we could be able to provide some support to them in ensuring that our counterparts in the Japanese to the
human rights.
inside the movie. Or even very far, you have the way of human rights. The amount of money involved, I don't know whether the government will be able to cut this.
There is one thought that does play a role in the military struggle. Need to be recognized, and they need to be afforded the very same benefits and awards that military veterans in the standard national force would entitled to. I think nobody can quibble with that principle. But what I disagree, though, is when you speak about those who were shooting and who were not shooting. Those who were placing their lives on the line for the liberation of South Africa, there are countless examples of individuals and families who did very similar things. Those who were detained without trial, those who were abducted and disappeared, those who were tortured, those who suffered terrible abuses and abuses of the stand that they took. That they didn't do so under the umbrella of a military organization, to my mind, is irrelevant. They played an instrumental role in delivering liberation and democracy to this country. And their sacrifices laid the very basis for our new constitutional democracy to afford special treatment only to those who happen to be members of an armed group. To my mind, it is in fact discriminatory, and we shouldn't countenance this in a constitutional democracy that upholds equality and respect for the rights of all. And in particular, our constitution recognizes the role of everybody who sacrificed their lives or endured hardship in making the democracy that we have here today. And so that's why I do say that. Provides a unique moment in our history and an opportunity to look at this bill. We need to consider expanding it to include victims of breaking their rights violations, or alternatively for us to show with a strong and unified voice that now is the time to address the plight of victims. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
No way in which you can meet
for this Jesus sense of providing an education session, the skill development center, and the rehabilitation center, because one of the main problems we identified was the fact that most of our children have the problem of substance abuse. Now, we came across one of the representatives of Bamba, Colonel Kuhari, Ken.
Phänomen. Not only we study issues, but there are social economic issues there, the issues of mental health. So there's quite a lot of things that are off social and economic nature. And it doesn't really have to be the military veterans that address those issues, because that comes with the policy around those issues. Now, the other point relates to, the other problem that we have about the bill that we feel that has to be addressed, the fact that there's no clear demarcation between the duties of the Director General in the department and that of the Advisor Council. On a practical point of view, we feel that if this has not been looked at closely, it is a potential source of conflict in terms of implementation of duties. Now, coming to the advisory appeal board. In terms of the appeal board, we agree completely with the appeal board. However, we feel that because of the nature of the program of military veterans, most of the complaints and their problems are related to medical problems. And we feel that there has to be a medical appeal board that deals exclusively with the medical aspect of the military veterans. That medical appeal board would have quite a wide range of opportunities. Among which, if you can go back to section 5.1 A and B, they relate to the duties of the president in terms of addressing the medical aspect of the military of the military veterans. We feel that those duties have been fallen under the ambit of the medical appeal board. The second duty will make sure that all military veterans have access to health. We know that the special hospitals for military veterans, military hospitals, they are all over. In our experience, a lot of teachers simply don't want to be treated in those facilities. They need to be able to access all health facilities, including those outside the military, because they feel that they're secure, because they're scheduled and they're accessible and they're more expensive. So, the medical appeal board will make sure that there is a network of facilities available all over the country that will cater for the needs of the medical veterans. We have suggested that a number of duties, I don't think we have to go over all of them. But the other problem that we not necessarily a problem. The other point that we want to highlight is the question of some of the terminology used to describe the programs of the medical veterans, particularly when it talks to the physical and mental disabilities. If you interrogate them, you find that when you talk about mental disabilities, you therefore interpret it to say that the compensation should be disability grant or something like that. We submit that the military veterans do not necessarily have mental disability, but mental impairment. The problems are wide ranging because of the post-traumatic stress problem. It has emanated into a broader problem like substance abuse, like broken family units, etc. So we feel that our terminology should rather tend to physical and psychiatric impairment. In that case, if you refer to that terminology, we know that just decisions. We should look at the individual, not just come with a general assessment for all of them. So the legislation must fight and encompass them. The other point is in terms of the management of the medical veteran patient campaign. We feel that expertise is primarily in the wrong department, which is the government implementation part. We feel that that duty of assessing and processing the government implementation part has to be removed from that department. There are no expertise. The turnaround time is too long. The processes can never be maintained. We try to intervene as medical practitioners and we say it's very smart. We suggest that once the advisory council is formed, they should try and constitute a new department or a new sector altogether that is dedicated to deal with the military patients. That is basically my answer, and my colleague will continue with the other sector.
Good afternoon. My name is Dr. Kabalana. I'm a Lieutenant General in the Military Health Hospital, one in Victoria, and the other one in the country. So we work together as medical practitioners, the general practitioners in the community, see the patient and then they refer them, well, not the patient, but the client. And they refer them. So we are a medical practitioner with the South African Medical Veteran Practitioner Group, and we assess military veterans who suffer stressful military experience and evaluate the severity of the impairment. This is the process that goes through the government employee pension fund. So we have seen a lot and heard a lot. So we actually have what we need to share with this committee. The issue that we need to take away is that military veterans must be empowered. We, as we look at the bill, see that there seems to be an intention in some quarters that it should be a way of making money for some people, rather that we focus on the need to empower the military veterans and not just deal with them as if they are paid. To this end, we comment on the aspects of the bill that must be revisited to ensure that the bill is restructured to empower military veterans now and in the perpetuity. Our country looks towards a better life for all, so the social political aspect of military veterans needs to be looked at. In South Africa, we have decided, or it was decided in Polokwane, that South Africa is a developmental state. So whatever we do, every non-governmental or governmental organization must find a way to ensure a sustainable development towards the realization of a better life for all. In other words, if we look at ways to make this bill work, we must focus especially on ensuring that we assist military veterans to make it work. The South African National Defense Force and the South African Medical Health Services and now the new Department of Military Veterans must also align their mission to ensure the thing that the military veterans will assist in the development of the state as a whole. There's an argument that in the past there were identifiable enemies of the state. Nowadays, the most severe identifiable enemies of the state are poor healthcare services, poor education training, crime, especially violent crime, and poverty, which needs to be reduced, and rural underdevelopment. These are the things, the areas that have been identified as the for them. He must plant the body in these things with them or in the support of them. Thank you.
Thank you. military from happening in empty. Don't have military conflict because they say it's like the person that wants to go to the university in their life. And you say, teacher, they went there and he died. But some people went there and he died. And you have to go there and lead to them too. So I agree with you that they should not be concerned with one type of political. Lastly, well, this seems to be a great interest, which I'm learning a lot. What is the difference between a fish and a fly? Thank you.
Chef, I know it's not that I didn't want to speak on this one. But Chef, can I share with your cat? How one the price at the from the country. I'm from the Eastern Cape. I've never heard about the Eastern Cape, but and we have a large deposit of ex-combatants in the Eastern Cape. I'm sure it's kind of a service.
National organization. So what supposed to happen?
members of Kuruman used to be members of the detainees' parent support committee. That structure is a structure that was responsible in identifying doctors to assist So I think if you can start to have a cooperation, it will assist us, it will assist you to access all these provinces.
The assignment is taken, I guess. You can do this.
And I'm so glad that we can put this up here.
the meeting in the benefit because of what we spoke about it. All of us want to talk about that you can hurt how freely. Like every week, we have this bill, we find this bill, and now we're going to this bill. And most of our people who are sitting outside, they didn't have an understanding about where they fit in.
Like,
South Africans,
let me interrupt you. In our program, you said this is an individual submission.
Yes.
We don't need to do that changing the message.
Oh, sorry.
We have your submission. Your submission, those issues that you raised are individual submission already.
Yes.
I guess you can just talk to them if you want to talk to them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Because it's our first time and we are so glad for this opportunity. I think you can see our expression today is that. But my understanding is that the militant being any South African citizen who is rendered the military service to any of the military organizations, certain and non certain, which were involved. In all sides of South African Liberation War from 96 to 94. What is the concern is that the report of the military task team indicates on the last day that there was a military grounding integration of the FUCC, which the defense. The South African Defence Force into the South African National Defence Force, or whether they were demoralized and the status that's involved by the defence of it. In my opportunity, the South Africa, South Defence Force units were part of the South African Defence Force. Thus, element of the second force of sub-integration into the new South African National Defense Force. That's not a separate distinct entity, but it's part of the South African Defense Force. While certain countries of South African headquarters members might have been demoralized under were taken up to the South African Defence Force. South African Defence Force members must therefore be included in the list of possibility benefits, history, or benefits unless in clause 5 of the bill, and excluding them would be contribution to the state benefit. As outlined above. Our means, tests, and benefits regarding certain benefits are outlined in clause 5 entitled Benefits Relating to the Military Federation. It is encouraged to note that the decision will be made with regard to the benefits that the military Federation will be entitled to remain there. My personal view is that these benefits should firstly be bestowed on military veterans who are in dire straits, that these who live in former settlements have been wounded or seriously scared and unemployed, as opposed to those who have a stable income and can afford assist later. I say this because my personal experience of a former member who are living in the state and surviving on mental means, the request is that these groups of military should be assessed as a priority and not assessed effective treatment. Let me just say that there are many of my colleagues who are still suffering from COVID-19 stress disorder to related conditions and quick assistance. One can only operate to the effect of this condition if we have it yourself or then someone that's close to our suffering from it. Clause 5, education, training and development. Most of our people who join the education do not have education beyond standard 6. We were given no access when we left the defense force. I believe that most of us can benefit from this. Clause 5, employment placement. I think this is one of the more important benefits because I believe that we could not enable to help ourselves and not only defend government to help us. The moral of this is a man a fishing rod and he can feed himself. It was some mind. Our pension fund is close 5. We need a defense force of the three with our civilian skills in need. We receive none, no pension, no unemployment funds, contribution, nothing. In fact, the salary we received was 65 and when you can use it by measuring points and stuff there. Clause 5, the chance to help him when he left the defense force, he received nothing. And there is a, and this will be welcomed by all military veterans. Number 4, Academy of the South African Colored Corps member, in relation to the mean test, it should be applied, and that those in the diocese should be priority. It is a request of the Department of Academy of South African Colored Corps members and the benefit that they would qualified for. Academy can be described as a permanent protection case force member. The person who are permanent, they get after his fourth number, they get PC, it's a permanent color. And the retirement, receive a pension and related benefits. The voluntary civilian service that the service before retirement takes and receive a related benefit. Employment service that the service before retirement takes and receive a related benefit. The person who resigns, these members receive their benefits as per HR policy and the state. But the contact persons, the FAC members, the person who are contact, the person who are CK, who are 2 years in the force, and 5 years, the person who are with RPs, fourth numbers, B, W, and CK. This is a person who will be taken out of the force and were given contact range from 2 years and a minimum period of 5 years. They did not qualify for all the benefits that permanent members receive and awareness, bonus, and joy. And when the contact expires, they have the
people.